One guy I read recently is one of those anti-spanking people, okay? And I actually think spanking's okay. We just never had to do it much because our kids would fight back. This guy wrote a deal, and he said, no matter how badly my son misbehaves, he goes, spanking is never the answer. I've discovered all I have to do. He said, no matter how bad he misbehaves, if I just take him on a simple drive, he's fine for weeks afterwards. And then he said, let me show you a picture of one of our recent drives. So, is that a great shot or what? Okay. Let's close in prayer. Here's the deal. By the way, I'm going to sit down a little bit. I had ankle surgery recently, so I'm walking around like I'm 110 years old. Before we start, number one is this. A good friend of mine who thought deeply enough about this, he told me, I really want to say two things. Number one is this. Parenting is overrated. Well, Paul's back there going, great, Ray's last talk here. This guy said parenting's overrated, okay? God created two perfect children, put them in a perfect environment, and they still screwed their lives up, okay? Because God made a big mistake during creation, which he gave everybody free will, okay? And which means this, God has no grandchildren, okay? And this guy said parenting is overrated. Jesus had 12 disciples, spent the majority of his time with him. I mean, they watched him do physical miracles. They watched him heal people. One of them still sold him out. One of them denied him. One of them screwed his life up, okay? And if Jesus didn't bat 1,000, so parenting is overrated, okay? Second thing I want to tell you is this. Parenting is underrated, okay? Parenting is underrated. Every study out there still shows for the vast majority of kids, no matter how intense peer pressure gets, long-term, the number one influence when they survey it is their parents, okay? So in a sense, you got to play this one because I've been in parenting things where you're going, some guy gets up, gives you all the answers, and you go, oh, man, my kids aren't perfect. I suck as a parent. Can I say that here? I'm a bad parent. And you really go, you can find a family where, matter of fact, every church has multiple families where you're going, man, one of the kids loves God, soft heart, walking with God, and the other kid said, hey, take a hike. And you're going, same parents, same church, same everything. What's the deal? Okay? And so this is a guilt-free deal, okay? Because here's the deal. God gave every child on the planet free will. And they can say yes to God or they can say yes to screwing their life up. Okay. Now, I actually think parenting can help tip the scales some. Okay, and so I want to begin with a verse. And this is a verse that if more Christian adults got, it would be very helpful. Okay, children are a, circle the word gift, children are a gift from the Lord. Notice the Bible says this, children are gifts, not punishments. Okay, and my wife and I have more than once looked at each other and said, remind me why we had these. Okay, now, our four kids are here, and they've looked at each other consistently and said, remind me why God stuck us with him. The children are a gift from the Lord. And then it says this. This is brilliant. Compares children to something. Like what? Circle the word arrows. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are the children born in one's youth. Now, here's the deal. Think about it for a second, okay? The Bible says your kids are like a arrow, which is all you need to know about parenting, okay? What do you do with an arrow? Shoot it. Okay? And now, so what do you do with a child? Okay, now wait. Hold on for a second. Here's the deal. If you're going to shoot an arrow, the first thing you do is? Okay, write down the word direction. Scott, will that come up or is that on some other deal? Probably not. Okay, write down the word direction on a blank up there. Okay, top left hand side. Is there room? Oh, good. Just below there. Write down the word direction somewhere, okay? In other words, before, here's the deal. The first thing I do is provide direction. I aim it. I tell it where to go. I point it. I try to give it direction, okay? then what do you do? Once you got an aim, then what do? No, you can't let go, okay? Second thing you do is this. You got to pull it back, which means write down the second word, motivation. Once I provide direction, then I got to pull it back, which is I provide motivation. Now, here's why this is so important. If all I do is provide direction and don't provide motivation, what happens when I let go? It does not move out, okay? It doesn't go in there. Now, we'll come back to that in a minute, okay? Then the third thing you do is what? Release, okay? Parenting, to me, this biblical model of parenting is better than anything any psychologist has ever come up with, because he's basically saying this, man, children are like an arrow, which means first you provide direction, then you provide motivation, and then you release, and off they go to college, onto their lives, to work and families and all this kind of stuff, okay? Now, some parents aren't very good at the release thing, okay? How many of you had one of those? Kids, keep your hands down. Okay, but here's my observation. Now, I spent a lot of years with teenagers. Matter of fact, some of us in here, lifetime with teenagers, and here's what I discovered. Okay, and I went, the Christian church is great at which one? Direction. We are the best people in the world at giving direction. We have sermons every week for more direction. We got books that provide more direction. We got every Sunday school class is about direction. Every parent's lecture in history is about almost direction, okay? And here's the problem. We are really good at direction, and here's the problem with that. Direction works well with little kids because they're looking for direction. However, during the teenage years, they already know all the direction, right? Okay, and what do they need? They need motivation, and here's the problem. Most parents try to motivate their teenagers by giving more direction in a louder tone of voice. Okay, and they wonder, why do kids walk away from God? Why do kids walk away from the church? Why do kids walk away from values? All of that kind of stuff. Because ultimately, no kid is going any direction. They are not internally motivated to go. Would you agree? Okay, so what I want to do is I just want to ask the question, how do you motivate kids as they get older so that they develop inner motivation, okay? And what I want to do is I'm going to start by saying this. I'm just going to give you a whole bunch of things not to do. Okay, and these are barriers. Number one is this: do not lose your cool. Do not lose your cool. Now, this is humbling. I'm the person in my family that tends to lose his cool. Okay, do not lose your cool. I love what Paul said to the Philippians: rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Okay, my favorite story about this happened in Seattle. I was flown up to Seattle, speaking at a parent conference at a church up there, and I fly in. And this really cool couple picks me up. We're in downtown Seattle, and they're driving me from the airport to the church. We're driving through downtown Seattle, and the wife turns around to the back seat, and she says, this is where it happened. And the husband and wife both start cracking up. And I said, what? And she goes, well, we got one of those, sophomore teenagers, so of course she's too cool for God, life, mom, dad, the church, and the whole thing. So my daughter wants to be dropped off a block away from school. And so the mom said, I'm driving down here with my daughter a few weeks ago. And she said, we pulled up to a stop sign, and I looked out the window. And this is downtown, not a real safe area. And she said, oh, my God, honey, get down. Shoved her daughter down. Her daughter like dives to the floor, speeds down two blocks away, pulls over. Her daughter's like, what's wrong? Was there a gun? And the mom said to the daughter, she goes, I'm sorry, honey. I just looked out the window, and I saw one of my best friends, and I just couldn't be seen with my teenage daughter. Awesome or what? That rocks. Do not lose your cool. Oh, hey, by the way, teenagers are experts in causing parents to lose their cool, aren't they? Okay, matter of fact, it's a sport. They'll invite their friends over, okay? They'll invite all their friends over. They go, watch mom. They know the push your button, mom explodes, and they like, see? Number one, do not lose your cool. Number two, do not delay living until your children turn 18. Do not delay living. I know more parents that are going, oh my gosh, my kids just became teenagers. I am going to be so on them. I am going to be so uptight. No dating, no nothing. I'm going to be sitting up every night. In other words, I'm going to grind this thing out so that they will be attracted to my faith. Okay? This just doesn't work. Okay? I love what Paul says to the Romans. May the God of... No, it's in the Bible. Is it on your thing? Oh, here. Yeah, yeah. In that case, grace works. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him. I love what Brennan Manning said. He said, if you have the joy of the Lord in your heart, please notify your face. Okay? I also want to make a comment. Okay? Churches do not get this right. Okay? Churches, would you agree? To laugh in church? I mean, then, matter of fact, somebody, we're actually having a conversation about, oh, I go to a deep church, okay? Which by and large means we don't laugh much, because if somebody has a sense of humor, they're shallow. And if you laugh and worship or goof off or that kind of stuff, you're shallow. And it's interesting because I think teenagers are going, is there joy? Is there life? Is anybody laughing? You know, we actually probably go overboard on this, unfortunately, or fortunately, but our first ever day camp, we had a kids' day camp. We were a tiny little church, 200 people, and our first kids' day camp, we had 107 or something kids in it, and they all wore their, so instead of wrapping it up on Friday night, we wrapped it up on Sunday morning, and we had all the kids in their breakaway day camp t-shirts on stage in our worship service, and the worship that morning was all the kids singing their day camp songs, okay? And this one religious lady was getting madder and madder and madder and madder. And finally, the third song, she stood up, stomped her feet, spun around, walked out, slammed the back door open, and we've never seen her again. It's a divine... But here you are. No, the... I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That was a divine subtraction in the life of our church, okay? Number one, do not lose your cool. Number two, do not delay living. By the way, if you're a parent or parents, who's married in here? Who's married? Good. Keep going out on dates, okay? Don't delay living, okay, until they turn 18. We know parents that are going, oh, we would never get a babysitter and put our children in the hands of someone else. I'm going, get a life. Number three, do not let them intimidate you. Do not let your teenagers intimidate you, okay? It's funny. One social scientist, and this is brilliant. By the way, high school kids, no junior high kid is intimidating. Would you agree? I mean, junior high kids, they're pre-people. I mean, they're not intimidating, okay? Now, high school kids, you know what I've discovered? And this is a lifetime of working, and I taught on a college campus. Here's the deal. Junior high kids act insane and have a ton of fun. High school kids act cool. Oh, I don't have my sunglasses. And are just too cool for God life itself. You go back to college, they start acting like they did in high school. I mean, in junior high. But high school kids love to... One social scientist said this, America is the screwed-up culture of all history because here's what American culture does. He said, Americans have developed the first culture in human history where the elders of the tribe look to its youngest members for what the standards of expected behavior should be. How stupid is that? Okay? Let's let Hollywood tell us what our values should be. Okay, do not let them intimidate you. By the way, we got a couple parents in our town that didn't do that. One guy met his daughter's first ever date at the front door with a running chainsaw, and he gunned it, and he just said one line: "Heard of a guy named Bobbitt?" And it was all over. You guys know. Our kids, Mark, my son here, reports to a guy named Judd Boyce. You know what Judd did on his daughter's first date? Daughter's first date picked him up. He walked up. As they were walking away, Judd said, "Hey, wait, hold it." Guy turned around, and Judd said, "Catch." He threw him a bullet. The guy caught it, and Judd said, "If you don't treat her well, the next one's going to be coming a lot faster." boss. Do not let them intimidate you. Number four, and this is a big deal, okay? Do not rescue them from consequences. Do not rescue them from consequences, okay? Galatians says, God cannot be mocked. Here's the deal. A man reaps what he sows. I'm in Marin County, which is Louisville, USA, and I'm in Marin. We had a wealthy lady in our church who had a son and who was, I think, a freshman, and she told me one day, she said, my son is driving me crazy. And I said, what's the problem? And she said, every day he leaves his lunch home, and every day I have to drive it to school for him. And I said, studies have shown it takes 47 years of missing lunch to starve. Okay? You know what's interesting is, though? He had trained her that she should suffer his consequences, okay? I watched my mom raise a daughter who ended up in prison because every time my daughter went to jail or anything, my mom bailed my daughter out. I'm sorry. It was Scott's daughter. My mom bailed her daughter out, and so here's what happened. I have a sister who has never dawned on her ever. My actions have consequences, and if they never learn that, why not change actions? There's no reason to change actions. Okay, and it's interesting. Parents, you feel like a bad parent when you don't rescue them. But it just sends a cycle all the way down, okay? So do not rescue them. And number five is this. Do not underestimate the power of a positive parent. Do not underestimate the power of a positive parent. I love this. Paul says this. In 2 Timothy 1:5, he says, I'm reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded now lives in you as well. Now, look up here. This is a big deal. Some of us were talking today about conservative Christian schools that are going. Mark, tell these guys what you told me this morning about, like, parents who shelter their kids and all that stuff. Oh, good, a mic.
Oh, I have a microphone. We were just talking about the idea of what to expose your children to. And I was talking about the idea that you need to teach critical thinking in your kids because so many parents teach, don't play video games, it's evil, don't watch movies, it's evil, alcohol is evil, so on and so forth. Every single thing is just blanket evil. And then when they turn 18, get out of the house, and they discover there's varying levels of everything. If they don't have the critical thinking skills to see the difference between bad and good, they'll just go, oh, if it's not all evil, it must all be good.
It's interesting, isn't it? I was thinking about that because Mark and Chase and Scott, we were talking about this at breakfast. We're going, a lot of kids in these hyper conservative Christian schools, the minute they're out, and part of that I think is this. This is very interesting. Here's the deal. There's a word that repeats in this verse. He says, boy, Timothy caught his mom's faith, who caught his grandma's, but it says, your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother's, and in other words, I think people only catch a faith when your relationship with God's alive, then you catch it. But when it's just rules and don't do this, it's not. That makes sense? Okay? And I just think, don't underestimate the power of a positive parent. I don't know if you guys, some of you guys may know a pastor. His name is Sean Bloomquist. He's in the Bay Area. I met Sean when he was in college. He was the wildest guy you've ever met in your life. I mean, Brian Bosworth. Anybody know who that dude was? He looked and acted just like him. He drove and here's the problem. His dad's a riot. Dad's a carpenter contractor in Marin County, hysterical guy. He met Christ when Sean was in high school, probably because Sean was in high school, and needed God. And, I mean, he preached to his son, all this stuff, nothing. I mean, his son ended up in jail for whatever, and he's just a fun guy, but he just was, like, wild, out of control, okay? Goes to Sac State, parties his way through 4 years at Sac State. His last year at Sac State, he's walking across a campus, and a guy from our church in Marin is walking across the campus. They run into each other, and they had gotten in a fight in high school when they were on opposing baseball teams. Okay, and, hey, what are you doing here? They caught up, and finally, this Sean guy goes. Now his dad had finally given up. He said, "I'm just going to be a model and pray for him, and I'm going to hit him with prayer." Okay, and this day at Sac State, this guy said, "What are you doing?" This dude named Gary goes, "You're not going to believe it, Sean, man. I became a Christian." And Sean's like, "Are you blanking kidding me? You got what?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "But it's not like what you think." They sit down, and in the next hour, this guy Gary leads Sean to Christ at Sac State. You ought to hear Sean's dad tell the story, or they do it together sometimes. Sean goes back to his dorm room or his apartment, calls his dad, and says, "Dad, are you sitting down?" His dad told me, his dad said, "What now?" Sean says, "I just became a Christian." His dad said, "Call me when you're sober," and hung up on him. God, that guy is now a pastor in the Bay Area, okay? Do not underestimate the power of a positive parent and their prayers. That makes sense? Okay? Now, those are five things not to do. Now, let me flip it and go, what do you do that at least raise the odds? And I'm going to have to rip through this because I think I'm running out of time. How are we doing? Okay. By the way, Paul, that's a lovely shirt, wouldn't you all say? Stand up for a second. I have never seen Paul look this dapper. Would you agree? Did you have your colors done? Okay. Let me give you six or so. I'll get as many of these as I can get in. Okay. Number one, provide a motivational environment. Provide a motivational environment, okay? I love it. Something about Jesus, he was so motivational, people packed his house, okay? And I want to give you three things that matter. Number one is this, atmosphere matters. Atmosphere matters. Is your home uptight or is it relaxed? Is it fun or is it serious? Is it cold or is it compassionate? Atmosphere matters, okay? Lots of people are trying to grind. They're going, "Hey, man, let's get out our Bibles. I'm going to drill it into you." Atmosphere matters, okay? And if it's that sort of thing. Second is this, attitude matters. Attitude matters. And the third thing that matters is this, the stages they are in matter more than you think, okay? And I'm going to do a little mini, some of you may have gotten this before, I'm going to do a little mini 3-minute adolescent development course. This is the single most, I used to teach adolescent development at university. This is the single most brilliant thing I've ever heard. A guy named Stephen Glenn said this, why do junior hires act like that? Why do high school kids act like that? Why? He said, because human development happens in three stages, okay? And the first stage, and you can write this down wherever, there's no blanks for it. The first stage is this, 0 birth to about age 5 is a time of discovery. It's a time of discovery. What are they discovering? They're discovering fingers, toes, mom, dad. They're discovering all that kind of stuff, okay? When Mark, I think, was about 4 or 5, we had a golden retriever that weighed, 100 pounds. Mark went up, yanked on both his ears, discovered what it was like to be run over by a golden retriever, okay? Now, here's the first 5 years of life. Do your kids change a lot? Oh, my gosh. Because they're sucking information, discovering all this kind of stuff. Now, from about age 6 to about age 9 or so, how many of you have kids this age? 6, 9, or 10? Okay. How many of you been in the hospital with that kid? Okay. They go from discovery to a time of testing. Okay. They go for a time of testing. Now, what's interesting is this. What are they testing? They are testing what they have previously discovered. And you know what they're going? What happens if I stick this into the wall sprocket? What happens if I do this? What happens if I ride my bike off the roof? What happens if I ride my bike? You know, they're testing all this kind of stuff, which is why a lot of broken bones occur in this age group, okay? Then, about age 10 or so, from 10 to about age 12, they move into the third and final stage, and here it is. It's conclusions. It's conclusions. And they draw conclusions, and here's what's interesting. Stephen Glenn would say this. He would say, it's a great thing, man. The happiest people in the world are all 10 years old. 10 years old, they can be at home on Friday night, no date, no sweat. Okay? 10 years old, they know what's right, they know what's wrong, they know who they are, they know who I am. I had a lady come up to me about a month ago, and she goes, I'm an atheist. And I said, I'll bet you weren't when you were 10. And she said, no, I wasn't. And I go, good, let's find out what happened. Okay? And there are no 10-year-old atheists. Matter of fact, if a kid in a classroom breaks the rules, every 10-year-old rats on the kid, right? Okay, because they got the rules. Now, does that happen in high school? No. They go, hey, give me the test. Now, what happens is this. Now, here's the deal. Stephen Glenn says they've drawn conclusions. They have entered full childhood. And then he said, a tragic thing happens. Puberty hits and wipes the entire thing out. Okay? Puberty hits, wipes the entire thing out. And by the way, this is interesting. Physical puberty is hitting kids earlier. And nobody knows why. I mean, there's no definitive study that nobody knows whether it's McDonald's food, indoor lighting. Literally, nobody knows. Okay, but physical puberty is hitting kids earlier. And here's the problem. Okay, they have entered full childhood. Whammo! Puberty hits, and all of a sudden they go, "I am going to be an adult sometime," and they start changing. Can they enter adulthood immediately? No, and Stephen Glenn says they have to go through the same 3 stages to become a fully functioning adult that they did to become a fully functioning kid. So, from about age 13 and 14 or so, 13 and 14, they go back into discovery. Now, what's interesting is, what years is that? Junior high, okay? That's why... Junior high, by the way, watch this. Anybody here want to go back to junior high? Heck no. Because that's why junior high kids are so up and down. You know why? They're in a time of discovery, okay? They're going, what do you think of me? What do you think of me? What do you think of me? I mean, they got a boyfriend at breakfast, break up by noon, boyfriend by dinner, okay? Up, down, up, down, up, down, okay? The junior high kids, they're in a time of discovery, okay? Now, that doesn't last either, because about age 15... about age 15 or 16 to about age 18 or 19 or 90, they go into a time of testing, okay? And that is high school, okay? And through generally first or second year college students. You know, now what's interesting, if somebody's not doing well psychologically and emotionally, they will take way longer to test. Okay, and it's a little bit what you guys talk about, the Christian school thing, was sometimes if you've been wrapped up so tight that you can't test, then it gets delayed, okay, which is what happens occasionally, okay? Now, I want to make a couple, and then what happens is this. About age 20, they draw conclusions, or 21 or whatever, they draw conclusions and move into full adulthood. Now, what's interesting is this. Some kids rip through this and draw conclusions up here. Okay, some kids just emotionally take longer to do this. Okay, and some people, I have a sister that has never gotten out of this. Okay, and she's going to pay a price for that until the things reverse around. Does this make sense, by the way? So if you're going, why is it kids are like they are? Now, this is actually kind of fun to think about for a second. For example, you have junior high and high school together in a church, which is a bad idea. Okay, because here's the deal. You have a camp, and junior high and high schoolers are at it. You announce the camp rules. Okay? All the junior high kids go, oh. All the high school kids, you've given them their to-do list for the week. Okay? Now, what also is interesting about this is this. Think about it for a second. a teenager comes swinging into the teenage years on the trapeze of childhood. Wham! Puberty hits. They let go of the childhood trapeze. You know you can tell when that happens? Posters in their room change. Mickey goes down and whoever goes up. Probably not necessarily Justin Bieber. Now here's what happened. Can they grab the adult trapeze yet? No. Why are teenagers so insecure? They have their feet firmly planted in midair. And so what do they grab onto? Usually each other. And if there aren't great systems, they go down together. Okay? Now, let me give you a couple other big deals here. Okay? Now, high school, here's the deal. Ninth grade is right here. 10th, 11th, and then 12th tends to be more down here depending on where a kid is emotionally. Most kids that royally screw their lives up, it all happens last half of their freshman year, generally through their junior year. Okay? And here's the problem, okay? Every time it happens, you will never know when a kid is on this side where they're going to be here. You can see some markers, but this is really a key time. Does that make sense? So I think it's a really smart move to kind of go when they get to be teenagers in that years, their sophomore, junior year, all that kind of stuff, all hands on deck, make sure there are any great youth groups, stuff like that. Here's the other thing, and this kind of relates back to some conversations we were having, which is kind of fun. Here, you know what? God has wired kids up to test, hasn't he? Okay? Has God wired teenagers up to test? Yes. God, make sure, God has wired every teenager up to test. And the response of the Christian church has been, sit down, shut up, don't test. Okay? The response of Christian schools, sit down, shut up, don't test. God has wired them to test. They're like, I'm ready to test. Okay? Way better to shape what they test. Every high school youth group and every Christian school during high school, it should be a testing lab. You know, go to Mexico, cliff dive, do whatever, okay? But because that's why when I was in youth ministry, we majored in student leadership and all of that kind of stuff. And a lot of kids never screwed themselves up testing alcohol, drugs, or that kind of stuff because they got their needs for testing met in other ways, but they knew of a need to test. I have a woman in Marin, you know, a typical rich, this is actually Granite Bay. Typical rich Granite Bay woman came up to me, her sophomore daughter, and she's going, I don't want my sophomore daughter going to Mexico. So could you quit promoting it because you're making her want to go? And I go, why wouldn't you want her going? I'm not sure it's going to be safe. And I finally said to her, and she said, can you guarantee me it will be safe? And I said, no. I said, I'll guarantee you this, though. Your daughter going down there and testing her spiritual gifts and testing another culture and testing serving and testing risking and testing speaking in front of a crowd and testing all of this kind of stuff and testing all this, you know, your daughter meeting her need to test things in that environment is going to be a lot safer than her growing up in Granite Bay and never learning to serve God, trust God, and test God. You know what I mean by that? Okay, it's a big deal. And so this first one is this. Provide a motivational environment, but atmosphere, attitude, and stages matter. And those sophomore and junior years are really, really, really big deals, okay? Second is this. Expose your kids to significant examples and significant events. Expose your kids to significant examples and significant events. By the way, during this and during this, who do kids look to? Parents. Okay? During this and during this, who do they start looking to? Other people. It may be peers or it may be, you know what it is? It's anybody they think has a very high cool factor that they respect. Okay? And so I think put them in environments where they see this kind of thing. And it, by the way, it's examples and events. I think it did something for the freezing girls to come here every summer, okay? And because they served here, they saw things, they're exposed to significant examples, significant events, significant people, things like that. Scott or Christy or Leslie or Mark, what kind of significant either examples or events impacted you? You have to stand up and whatever it is. It was interesting. What year was that? That was no accident. And we took them out of school for how long? Yeah, 6 weeks. And how thrilled do you think their school was about this? Oh, you can't do that. I'm going, get a life. These are my kids. We're out of here. Okay? And we, by the way, never, here's the deal, people, never let school screw up their education, okay? And do we have any teachers here? Good, okay, good. And so we pulled them out, they took all their homework, and we hauled them out, and then we didn't stop there. We actually then went to... And then instead of going back to school, we went to Newport Beach for about a week and a half, and they did all their homework on the beach, okay? And you know what's funny is I thought it was good for them during this season to have something just to break the cycle of all that peer pressure, okay? You know, by the way, most high school seniors, they're done with peer pressure. And the reason they're done with peer pressure is they're like, why screw the rest of my life up to please a bunch of people I really know I'm not going to see ever again? Okay, but your sophomore and junior year, man, it's a big deal. Okay, they expose them to significant. Mark or Scott, did you have anything on this one? Yeah, go ahead.
There we go. So I've been to Kenya with my dad 3 or 4 times now, and. We've gone with Compassion, and we've gone separately to go to a place called the Rift Valley Academy, which is the boarding school for missionaries for all of Eastern Africa. And it's been a very, very cool thing because in going there, you see kids and you see families who have spent their entire life growing up in the mission field and who have committed their entire lives to mission work in parts of Africa and in Kenya and it's incredible. And we've been to Compassion International sites there where you've got guys like this guy that we've met named Pastor Simon, who runs a project for Compassion Kids and has, what, like 400 kids?
Yeah.
Something like that. He's got 400 kids in his project that are sponsored through Compassion. And stuff like that is very eye-opening and sobering and definitely falls into the motivation category when it comes to the whole Arrow philosophy, but it's an amazing experience because you see a very different side of life than you would in Granite Bay, in California, in America, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like night and day, and it's pretty cool. I mean, my favorite picture of Mark is we got a church in Kenya, and they had spent 15 years trying to raise money just to put a floor in so they could use the building, and many of you used it in 15 years. And we, Mark and a team of guys, and John Harrison, a bunch of guys went over, dug, had to dig with 2 feet down in that floor, and they now are using this church. And I mean, it's just cool stuff like that. It's interesting, though. During the teenage years, I think they need some things like that. Okay? Whether it's, by the way, one of the things we've done, we have a Thrive Conference every year. Some of you were at this, right? Okay? Take your teenagers out of school and bring them to our Thrive Conference. I promise you, they will never see adults act like this ever again in their life. It is an absolute mayhem riot, okay? But I just think you got to break the cycle of what every kid's doing every now and then, okay? Expose them to see. Number three is this. Point them to the future. Point them to the future. I love the words of Jesus. Neither do I condemn you. Go and leave your life of sin. You know what's great about Jesus? He was perfectly balanced. I don't condemn you for your past. Now, go and with God's strength, get it better in the future, okay? And I actually think this. We're going to be either future-focused or future-focused, and parents that are best for kids are those that are future-focused, okay? Number four is this. Develop dialogue. Develop dialogue. And Carol, can you tell these guys about when you were sitting? Because somebody came up to Carol yesterday and said, your home must be a laugh a minute. Your husband's so funny. That happened down in Mexico. Can you tell them about that? With very good reason. What's interesting is, here's the deal. I'm going to make three comments on this. Number one is, you have a bank account with every kid, okay? And when you connect and hang out and connect, you put money in the bank with that kid, okay? When you have to discipline, that's making a withdrawal. Parents get in trouble when they're making withdrawals and there's nothing in the bank. Does that make sense? That's where you get really angry kids, okay? And there's, I think, two kind of ways to help with this. Number one is this, ask a lot of questions, okay? So when we would sit down for dinner when they were little, did we ever have a dinner we didn't ask questions? I don't think so. So I just sit down and go, who wants a question, okay? And, you know, little kids, that side, they're like, I do, you know? So we'd go, okay, best thing that happened in school. Everybody answer that. Best thing. And then we'd ask. Then as they got older, like a year ago, they were over and their friend, somebody was with us I don't remember who it was. And what I did was I wrote a whole bunch of individual questions on 3x5 cards. I threw it in a pan. I set it on the table. I said, okay, everybody reach in, pull out a question, whatever the question is, everybody answer it, okay? And Paul, we should come out with this as a thing people could get, like 300 questions, okay? And then the next time we did it, I was like, okay, pull out a question and you can ask that question to anybody at this table and have to answer it, okay? Anything that creates dialogue. The other thing is this, our kids will have a lot of people over. We watch a TV program called The Bachelorette. I know. Go ahead, Paul. Give him the microphone. Close in prayer. And what happens is we have, how many kids are over last week? Yeah, like 20-something thing. And it's guys and girls, and they're all watching. This is the stupidest, sleaziest thing. Okay, but what's cool is occasionally we'll stop it and go, how stupid is this? You know, so everybody gets, none of these people are going to go, I'm going to do this. You know, but it's interesting because sometimes when teenagers are over, I'll pass around a basket, all right, all your cell phones in here, get a life, in here now. You just collect everybody's cell phone because it blows my mind. You can put a bunch of people together in a room and nobody's talking because they're all sitting there texting all their friends. By the way, you guys, teenage type, is that irritating when everybody's sitting there not talking to you? Absolutely, okay? So I'm just going, hey, put them in the box. I'm the bad guy, but they actually like it better, okay? And then we give them back at the end because some of them are shaking, okay? Develop dialogue. Number five, and Scott, have we got that video clip? It doesn't work. Doggone it. Number five, integrate Christian service into the home. Integrate Christian service into the home. And because I'm out of time, I won't talk about that. Great video that you can just imagine how good it was. Number six is this. Give heavy, heavy doses of encouragement. Give heavy doses of encouragement. Because you know what's interesting about this is? At some point, Jesus said to the disciples, no longer do I call you slaves. Now I call you friends. And that can happen in a parent relationship with the kids, okay? And I actually had a really good closing illustration, and we'll skip that too because I am totally out of time. Here's the deal. I know this is like taking a drink from a fire hose, and it's like 12 points and a bunch of stuff. Here's the deal, though. I would also say this. None of us are equipped enough or clever enough to change the life of another human being because God has given him free will. That takes the work of the Spirit of God. So stay on your toes and on your knees. God bless you. Here's Paul.